This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games, or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
97.1 FM Talk.
On demand audio.
Oh, a little keen on the bumper music. That's always for Fred because he's a
keen fan.
That's right.
How about old Fred Bottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
Got a couple of musical things here that I want to share in a moment. We have Sue's News coming up as well. We have Fish Fry Fridays kicking off this week. So we're going to be in the city, Holy Trinity Serbian Orthodox Church. That's on Serbian Drive. That is sort of near Soulard, right? Sue, is what my understanding is.
I have the menu. Tell me when.
Oh, go ahead.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Fried catfish, spicy catfish, fried tilapia. You can get a combo, which is one regular cat, one spicy cat. Fish tacos, baked cod with Creole sauce, a half-pound peel-and-eat shrimp, shrimp po' boy.
Yes. Oh, listen to that.
All meals include two sides, bread, and dessert, $18 a plate.
That sounds really, really good.
Did we tell them about our food requests? we have to sample everything so we can talk about it on the air.
I hope we didn't.
Oh, we will inform them
that
on Friday.
Terrible.
Right, well, come see us. We will, you know, do the roundtable live, the whole show out there on Friday afternoon. If I say, Sue, the name David Johansen, or I could say a different name, Buster Poindexter, do you know who I'm referring to?
Buster Poindexter, I do.
Yeah, so how would you describe him? Do you know?
I remember him from that Bill Murray movie.
Yes, yes.
The one in Christmas. That's it.
Yes, he played the Ghost of Christmas Past. But David Johansen was also a big star in the 70s. He was in a band called the New York Dolls, which was a big punk band. It is, it's said, and I think Nikki Sixx wrote this in one of the biographies, that when he grew up in Idaho, he jumped on a bus to go to L.A. to be a rock star. He had three cassettes, David Bowie, T-Rex, and the New York Dolls. And they were kind of a precursor to a lot of the hair bands, Poison, etc. in the 1970s. But David Johansen kind of had a bunch of different incarnations. He became this character, Buster Poindexter.
Olé, olé.
Did a cover of this song here.
Olé.
And had a couple of hits in the early 80s. And as you indicated, he was in Scrooge. You might remember this.
Going the wrong way!
Relax, Frank. Enjoy the ride.
How do you know my name?
I know absolutely everything, Frank. You see, I'm the ghost.
It's a great scene. He's driving him around. It's this crazy taxi cab scene,
yeah.
Right? And then the other thing about David Johansen is he also performed as David Johansen. He was like, he had three different New York Dolls, David Johansen, and Buster Poindexter. And a reason I bring all this up, as you might imagine, is he passed away over the weekend at the age of 75. He had stage 4 cancer and a brain tumor. So that was kind of sad. But I just, there was a lot of punk influence. Our friend Tim Summer would love to talk, I'm sure, about the New York Dolls and their influence. This is one of those bands that maybe people can't point to as one of their favorite bands or even list songs, but I promise you, that was a guy that influenced a lot of acts that you listen to. And on the topic of music, let me ask you this question, okay? So my friend Rick's Resort out in Las Vegas, he over the weekend went and saw this band. part. Now, here's the deal, and you tell me if this should have been disclosed. Ann Wilson came out in a wheelchair. She did the whole show in a wheelchair.
Whoa.
Rick had no idea. It wasn't like, you know, when the tickets went on sale, it says that Ann Wilson is going to be in a wheelchair. Now, I think that if you're a big fan of the band, you know that she's struggled over the years. And I don't know. How would you feel if you went to a show? I've never been to a show where someone has been in a wheelchair. I'm trying to think if I've even had someone that's just sat down for the show, because maybe that's happened with aging artists.
If she can still belt it,
yeah,
I don't think that really matters.
Too much.
Here's the problem. She cannot.
Oh.
She can't. So you might be right. Maybe, you know, you wouldn't hold that. But no, there's not a lot of that going on either. I don't know. That's kind of deceptive to me.
Oh,
Nancy still played the Flying V, though. I heard her guitar work was pretty crazy. But they're doing a little residency in Las Vegas. I don't know. I probably would have wanted to know that. But then again, I also am the person who is trying to stick to my rule of not seeing any artists over the age of 70. And I think I'm doing okay on that right
now.
Which
is ageist.
You're right. It's discriminatory. Yes. There's no doubt about it.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
You know, we were talking about Fred going to Japan earlier, and he's been assigned to buy certain items to take with him. And the sad news is, Mark, I'm not sure you're aware, he has lost the raincoat outfit he took to Alaska when he was assigned to purchase for
right.
that trip.
I didn't pick up on that earlier.
It dawned on me what happened to it.
Oh.
I never opened it, so I returned it once we got back.
Now that's a Fred move.
So there you go.
Yep. Okay.
So now you're in need of another rain jacket because you returned that one.
Yeah.
That's where we're at.
Yep.
Okay.
You can go back, get the same one, Fred. And do we have neighbor Joyce involved? Is she involved in, you know, narrowing down and helping out with any of this? She's the one who gets his shirts.
I think she's on mail pickup. She'll be picking up our mail.
Oh, okay. But she's not helping you in prep, to get this stuff?
No, she specializes.
Oh, that's fair.
That's true.
Why do I feel like maybe a black hefty bag with some arms cut
right.
out are going to be the solution
Fred,
for Fred?
I've got like one from the racetrack, you know, a poncho. Will that work?
I've got a poncho,
but that's not good enough.
You want a
real rain jacket. Yeah. That's right.
That's fair. On this day in history, I'm just bringing this up because I don't know. I found it interesting. 162 years ago, in 1863, Congress passed the first wartime draft in the U.S. history. The Conscription Act during the Civil War called for men, all of them between ages 20 and 45. That's a pretty big jump in there, isn't it? Yikes.
I would say.
And then 150 years ago, in 1875, the first indoor hockey game was played in Montreal. And, of course, it ended with a giant brawl. Of course it did.
That's perfect, though,
yes.
isn't it?
Yeah.
And I guess because it was indoors, that's why it
so
made
when,
a
when
big
was that?
Thing.
What year?
1875
oh, okay.
in Quebec.
Okay.
All right. I will admit to you that I read about the Iditarod today. Does anybody? It's started on Saturday. And it goes from Anchorage to Nome. They've got sub-freezing temperatures. And each team has a kennel of 12 to 15 dogs per musher. And so we're going to see right now Jason Mackey from Fairbanks is winning. I'm just letting you know. I'm fascinated by this thing.
You know, Fred, you would agree with this, I'm sure, that we come from an era, if you go back to the 1980s, and I started anchoring newscasts in the 1980s, it was something that was featured in the, you know, we were talking about the AP a lot. The
a
AP
lot
would always do coverage and updates on the Iditarod. And I don't know why. Like, there was somebody named Susan Butcher. I remember her name. She won a lot of them. But some of the other names I don't really remember. But it was, I'm not saying, it just doesn't seem to get as much attention as it used to.
Yeah.
Well, the AP is still covering it. I just looked up Iditarod 2025, and they have the first story about this.
Yeah. Well, usually there's complaints about the treatment of the dogs, too.
I don't know. Yes, I've heard those as well. And there are some camps that say, oh, they love it. The other camps that say, oh, they don't. Same thing, horse racing, anything with animals.
Right.
Is it a question? Who knows? All right. Anora won 5 Oscars last night, including Best Picture and Best Actress. Is it Mikey or Mickey Madison?
I don't even.
What is Honora about?
I have never heard of it. Anybody? Yeah,
no.
Mark?
No, here's the deal. All right, let me explain this to you. As someone who reviewed movies for 30 years, Oscar, once again, the Academy has once again gone into the area of nominating and also awarding films that no one has ever seen.
I have.
And not only that, beyond that, not only have people not seen it, they'll never see it.
What is it?
Movie.
What is it?
I watched the beginning of it. All right.
Okay.
It has to do with this this Russian chick that's in New York, and there's a strip joint involved, and I don't know anything more because I only made it through like 10 minutes of the movie and it didn't seem interesting to
me. This is on IMDb. It says, a young escort from Brooklyn meets and impulsively marries the son of a Russian oligarch. Once the news reaches Russia, her fairy tale is threatened as his parents set out for New York to get the marriage annulled.
Huh.
Is it even on anything like to watch?
I
like,
have
streaming
no
service
idea.
Honora is the stripper, and I don't know if it's Mikey.
Well,
or
that's
Mickey.
A sweet story.
But here's my sense. I told Fred this story. Like The Brutalist, Adrian Brody won for The Brutalist. So I also watched. This kind of is my thing this Oscar season because I still had access to the movies. I watched 10 to 15 minutes of The Brutalist. I decided that it looked pretty interesting, but it was 3 hours long, and I never went back to it. And my guess is that Oscar voters did the same thing. They're like, you know what? That Adrian Brody guy, he's pretty good. He won an Oscar before.
You know,
we're
going
to vote for him, but we didn't really make it through the damn movie, so we're going to vote for this other one.
You
kind of
right.
did like a flight, an
yeah.
Oscar movie flight.
Yeah, that's what happened.
A sampler platter.
Oh, that's interesting.
I did, Fred. I really did.
How was the shrimp cake?
The movie that I like the Dylan movie, and did anybody win for that last night?
I don't know, because I didn't care to go through it all.
Nobody cares. I didn't watch a minute of it, and I really don't care.
I have to watch Conclave. I have
to. What's that?
That's the Pope.
That's the Pope.
Yeah.
That
won the BAFTA. But I've had people tell me that's boring.
Well, Fred he's doing it for the people.
Right.
That's his title over
right.
there.
By the way, how's the Pope right now? We haven't heard about him this weekend.
Oh, he had a setback today.
Oh.
Okay, that's not good.
So he had to be, I don't know if it was intubated, but they had to go in and remove a whole bunch of mucus from his lungs, and he's on a non-mechanical ventilator right now.
Oh, wow, okay.
Oh, dear.
So it was a bad day.
According to the pronunciation, it is Mikey Madison.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. It's spelled that way, but I don't trust names anymore.
Especially for a girl.
Right?
Just, don't hear
exactly.
that one.
Exactly. One of the original Office cast members will be part of an upcoming spinoff. Oscar Nunez is returning as Oscar Martinez on the Peacock series, which takes place, I kind of found this, well, I mean, it's certainly apropos, struggling Midwest newspaper, where the same film crew from The Office is making a new documentary. So that's good. I mean, that they have the same film crew, and of course, a newspaper is probably perfect. There's no word on a title yet, but sources say it could just be The Paper, and we don't know where Oscar fits in.
Yeah, now, I'm curious how he goes from Pennsylvania to the Midwest. How did he get there?
Well,
let me tell you
Midwest,
how,
though.
Ethan.
Pennsylvania could still be the Midwest, right?
When The Office
really?
Ended in 2013, yeah. Oscar was running for Pennsylvania State Senate while still working at Dunder Mifflin, so we assume that he didn't make it and then moved.
Dr. Oz beat
the
him.
Pain.
And yes. Then it didn't go well from there. Fetterman, too.
This has some music. This one is because Morgan Wallen has just passed Garth Brooks for the most weeks and number one on the Billboard Top Country Albums chart. Now, that's albums. Morgan got there 2 weeks ago with this.
I bet you bought that beer with your daddy's car.
I think I've even checked out the new album. I've heard some songs recently, but I didn't even know there was a full album out.
97 weeks on the top with Dangerous, the double album. Fred, you've listened to it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, Dangerous, the double album, is outstanding. That was a great. Is that the one we're talking about?
No.
Okay.
Well, hold on.
We're talking about One Thing at a Time, which is the second one.
Morgan got there 2 weeks at number one with I Know Me, 97 weeks on top with Dangerous, a double album, yes, and then 75 weeks at number one with One Thing at
okay,
a Time.
Let's,
so,
and let's just point this out. This is where I was confused. It's not a new album. It was out in 2023.
Yeah.
So he hasn't actually had a release.
It's just been out. It's been
exactly.
out one album.
Correct. That's
exactly.
how he's got that many weeks.
I got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, easily confused, the host is sometimes.
Yeah. And so that passes Garth, which is huge.
That's crazy. How old is Morgan Wallen? He's not that old.
He's
that's the
not
crazy
that
thing,
old.
Too.
Mid-30s?
He's going to demolish this record.
At the Blues game on Saturday night, Carl from the Mark Cox Show, who also does the music at the Blues games, played a Morgan Wallen song.
He's 31.
I Had Some Help.
And
the crowd went crazy. Crowd
is that the duet with
Post Malone?
Posty?
Yes, with Post Malone.
Yeah. All right.
Man, I love the double album. That's where I became hooked on Warren Wallen. You look at that, that record's got, I don't know, 30 songs or something like that, and every one of them is good. And, you know, hell of a writer, that's for sure.
Scientists in the UK have created a new banana that stays fresh for 12 hours after being peeled. I'm kind of impressed by this.
Yeah, me too.
Now, you can put them, so here's the thing, you could put it in a fruit salad, you could leave it out for a minute, and it's not going to get disgusting and brown. And even at 24 hours, the new variety will have 30% less browning than a traditional banana. Everything else is the same. They have the same taste, the same smell, texture, just with edited genes. And of course, that's slightly controversial. They say it isn't a GMO because they didn't introduce any foreign genetic material. They just tweaked the genes that were in there, getting rid of the ones that made it brown. So we'll see how that goes.
I'm pretty particular with the ripeness of the banana. I like it like
just real, after green.
Just after green.
Right there with you.
And then
Fred,
you get a little too mushy. And I mean, it can mush you fast. And I give it to Oreo because he loves bananas.
I'm more on the yellow side.
All right, but no brown spots?
Yeah, no brown.
No, I don't want brown.
Ethan?
No.
Can't be anywhere near green. I'm more so on the straight yellow or anywhere after with the brown spots.
Yeah. I like the crispy almost, but not.
Yeah, but there's like a fine line there, right?
Yeah, you got to get it right at the right time.
Because if it's too green...
Yeah, it's no good.
Not as much flavor.
But that's what they always have at the store, though.
That's right.
It's like every time I go, they're all green.
Right, and then they go from all green to all brown in like 2 hours. I think that's the whole point of the store.
Exactly. The new bananas are supposed to launch later this month in several countries, including the U.S. and Canada, but they won't be available in Britain, where the scientists are based.
How recent is this story, like brand fresh out? Like,
yeah,
you know,
fresh
we're I want to make sure RFK is okay with this, right? You know, this isn't, you know, nothing in these that's going to be keeping them fresh.
What do you do about banana bread? I mean, aren't you supposed to make banana bread with the ones that spoil,
you're going
to
buy the normal ones for that. Spoil away. And finally, at Sue's News, we have today's random fact. Well, I've got so many. All right, we'll do this. There's enough cash in circulation in the U.S. that every single person in America, adults and kids, could carry at least $6,500 on them. That's a lot of cash in circulation.
Hmm.
But, you know, people use more, some people use less.
That makes sense, though.
You know? And that's
I never have cash on me.
I never do either. Michael always has cash. He says it's a chick thing that I don't have any. Fred, sorry, you're a chick.
Maybe this is a dumb question, but like, what is it? What is the official definition for in circulation? Like, what does it have to be qualified as that?
Well,
it's either
mean?
In someone's pockets or it's at a store or something like that. It's not in a bank. I think that's how I would interpret it, right?
Yeah. Interesting.
By the way, I don't know if I'm going to challenge Michael on that. Look, I don't carry a lot of cash. The only cash that I really feel like need is for tips at the car wash. And everything else is on my credit card
that's
and my
a
debit
couple
card.
Of
how
ones.
Often you go to the car
well,
wash?
Well, that's all it is.
Yeah.
Well, I go to the car wash a lot. But I mean,
okay,
Yeah, I have singles and maybe
I will
a
let
couple
him know.
Of fives.
Fred, you're off the hook.
But what are you going to do in Japan, by the way? I mean,
well, on
I bet they're pretty
cash?
Advanced with the debit cards.
It's a good time to go, though.
That's out of my
well, because when I was
range.
In, it's Marie's.
Yeah, that's right.
All
although
I'll say,
they have envelopes made up with tip money in it for certain people.
Well, that's smart.
That's already
that is smart
to do.
Very generous,
even though you're not supposed to tip in Japan.
I was in Spain with listeners 2 years ago, and I remember mentioning this, and I think the pandemic had a lot of influence, but they were so good there with the tap and swipe. You know, just tap and then you're done with it. You don't have to, like, it drives me crazy why there's not more convenience stores, gas stations that don't do it like the QT, where you just, if it's under $25, boom, you're out of there.
Boom.
Right?
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. And I think you'll find in Japan they're probably more advanced when it comes to currency.
I think the exchange rate is pro you right now, Fred.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
good.
I think so. That may be why you're going.
Hey, you can afford a nicer rain jacket if that's the case.
Yeah,
that's
you're right.
Patagonia.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omised, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism, so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at Omised.com. That's Almased.com.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have a couple things still to come in the 5 o'clock hour. Paul Morrow, who is with us on a regular basis, he's the founder of theopsdesk.org. We have information on Gene Hackman's death. There is an interesting NYC, New York City ICE conflict. And then the mayor of Boston, this is quite something, offering sympathies to a knife-wielding man who was shot by an off-duty cop. But the guy was trying to kill the cop, but she offers empathy to the killer. This is what happens. This mayor of Boston is quite something. Bhatyanga Sargon at 5:30. Plus, I will have an audio cut of the day. You know, I've mentioned before that I don't pay quite as much attention to the Illinois side of the equation when it comes to politics as Annie certainly does. But I can't help but notice the big fat guy that runs the state from time to time.
The things that I'm speaking out about now, about, you know, the threat to our democracy, this is not a message to win elections on. It's something people need to know. The prices at the grocery store are going up because democracy is being taken away.
I don't even know what he meant by that, but there's some other things that are happening in Illinois when it comes to spending taxpayer money. We thought we'd highlight some of those this afternoon. Jason Plummer is an Illinois state senator. He's back with us this afternoon. Senator, how are you on this Monday?
I'm doing well, Mark. How are you?
I'm fine, but your governor continues to entertain quite a bit, doesn't he?
Well, you know, that's one word for it. If you're a Missouri resident, it's probably entertaining. If you're an Illinois resident, it's quite frightening at times.
Do you know what he was even saying when he was talking about the democracy issues and how that's affecting, you know, prices? Because he kind of lost me there. I think he lost a lot of people.
So J.B. Pritzker has a history of he's just an unserious person, and he has a little bit of a history of calling people names. You know, he's not accustomed to tough questions from the media. He's not he has super majorities in the legislature. And because the rate that he writes checks, none of them really question much of what he does or says. And so he's just not a man accustomed to no or bad news. And when you give it to him, he kind of lashes out. He's very thin skinned and he just lashes out. So, you know, he says that, you know, Republicans are a threat to democracy, and because of that, you know, prices at Schnucks and Deerbergs are going up or something like that. I don't understand it, but that's kind of the way he operates.
Yeah, he seems to, you know, he loves the national attention. I guess he feels like he might be a presidential candidate at some point. But let's highlight something fiscally reckless in the state of Illinois, and I think that's, you know, over the decades, relatively easy to do. But here's a story from last week. It says Governor J.B. Pritzker's administration vastly underestimated the cost and popularity of a pair of health insurance programs for immigrants who are not citizens that has ended up costing the state $1.6 billion since this began in 2020. So there's an audit report that was released last week, Senator, and it said, aside from the inaccurate projections of the cost and the number of people who would enroll, the audit uncovered more than 6,000 people enrolled in the programs who were listed as undocumented despite having Social Security numbers, and nearly 700 who were enrolled in the program for people 65 and older despite being younger than that. Then there's all other things, like 400 people were in there that appeared to be in the country long enough to qualify for Medicaid. So all kinds of questions in this audit. How can you highlight this even more, and what are you guys going to do in Springfield about this?
Well, so the audit report was probably shocking to a lot of people, and I hate to say, see, I told you so. It wasn't shocking to me or a lot of folks that serve in Springfield, because this program originally rolled out, and the governor's office projected that it would cost something on the order of $50 million. And that $50 million quickly became $200 million.
Yeah.
And that $200 million quickly became, well, it's going to cost $400 million, right? And that's where they stopped. And we argued from day one that this would be over $1 billion. Some people feel that it's closer to $2 billion when you add in everything. And, you know, I get frustrated at the reporting where they say, oh, you know, they missed the estimate. It was underestimated. No, what they did was they lied to you, because they knew they had the same data and the same information that the Republicans had. They just had to say it was going to cost $400 million, because otherwise they would have to acknowledge their budget wasn't balanced. And so this wasn't a surprise to people in Springfield, but it might have been a surprise to folks that just heard about it.
All right. So just to go over the math here, so we're not losing folks here on the Missouri side, This goes back to 2 years ago, February of 2023. He takes steps to curtail enrollment in the programs because they knew that that initial $220 million estimate is 5 months later, $1.1 billion. So a little over $500 million apparently is set aside. You can check me on these numbers that's passed by the legislature in 2023. So these aren't just normal program cost overruns, right? This is outrageously higher than was anticipated. And then to make it worse, it goes on for 2 years, and then they decide to audit the thing and find out where all the money's going, right?
That is 95% accurate, yes. And it's 100% directionally accurate. The problem is, while Republicans, and I don't mean to make it a partisan issue, it just so happens this is how it lined up, but while Republicans in Springfield said, you're spending two and three times on this program what you're budgeting for, not only were they underestimating the number, intentionally so, but they were still pushing legislation to expand the scope of the program to allow more people to participate. So I think when you see spending for the most recent fiscal year, the numbers are going to be even worse. And may I remind you, the same budget that they, when they passed the $1.1 billion projection, they increased taxes on citizens in Illinois. Can you guess the number, Mark? $1.1 billion.
Yeah.
So not only is the program, you know, wildly missing its targets, its estimated spending targets, but they're just raising taxes on the hardworking people of Illinois to pay for this boondoggle. And, you know, when the governor says they have balanced budgets, it's programs like this that we know they're intentionally undershooting that's throwing our budgets billions of dollars out of whack. So, and until we get our arms around that, we're not going to fix the economy.
Yeah, so what's the answer for you guys, though, in Springfield? What do you do about this?
Well, we highlighted it. I mean, I'm not going to lie. We're in the super minority, right?
Right.
And so it's going to take changes at the ballot box. It's going to take changes for people to understand. And I hate to use a word like this, but Governor Pritzker called us Nazis a few weeks ago. I guess I'm okay saying people are lying, right? It's going to take people in Illinois to know that they have legislators lying to them about the impact these programs are going to have on them. When I was first elected to the legislature a few years ago, the first budget I voted on was $38 or $39 billion. Today, we're looking at a $55 billion budget. So our budget's up 37% in 6 years, and we've seen no positive effects of that, and the taxpayers are on the hook for that.
Yeah, that's typical, as you know, in Illinois, right? I mean, it's not like it's anything new when it comes to the fiscal sanity, is it?
No, we stand up every year during appropriations committees, during the budget negotiations, and we try to highlight these things. But the taxpayers are kind of the last people that are thought of in Springfield. And, you know, we're talking about the migrant health care, which is a boondoggle, right? But there's a lot of other programs we could be talking about, Mark. And, you know, everyone can take sides in Washington, D.C. on what Elon Musk and the Doge team is doing. But if people don't want transparency in government and people don't want government to be accountable, I don't know exactly what they want. And in Illinois, we need transparency. We need accountability. And programs like these need to be audited. One of the great boondoggles in Illinois that we're still dealing with is all of the pandemic era programs, where we know for a fact through IDES, the Illinois Department of Employment Services, we were probably spending $5 billion in fraudulent claims overseas or out of state.
$5
billion. Probably more than that.
Yeah.
And the governor's office and the legislature is fighting the audit of IDES. And so transparency and sunlight are a good thing. And that's really what we need in Illinois. And I think that's what, you know, us in the minority are largely fighting for.
That's amazing. Senator Jason Plummer, let me just ask you to highlight one thing, because I never even mentioned it a few weeks ago. I didn't see a lot of coverage of it in St. Louis. I didn't even see a lot of coverage of it nationally. And I don't know how much was covered in Chicago. I'm assuming it was covered more than here. But Mike Madigan, the former Speaker of the Illinois House, who was there for decade after decade, who was one of the more dominant figures and more corrupt figures in Illinois politics, was indicted a couple years ago. He was finally found guilty a few weeks ago. Now, he wasn't found guilty on everything, right, Jason? Can you kind of break down what happened with that?
Yeah, so he wasn't one of the most prominent figures. I mean, Mike Madigan ran Springfield, Illinois with an iron fist for darn near 30 years,
yeah.
Regardless of the administration. He was the most powerful figure in Illinois politics. He had a lot of charges. I don't remember the total number. I want to say it was like 32 or something like that. He was found guilty on most of them. He's awaiting sentencing. And, you know, I would take a pause there because Republicans like to campaign on Mike Madigan and talk about how corrupt he was, right? And I don't think that that's necessarily the right mindset, because Illinois has a culture of corruption. And if people think... You know, if people think one person is the cause of the corruption, one, they're wrong. But two, that's a great cover for other corrupt figures in our government. And so now you have the Democrats pointing at Mike Madigan, too, saying, look, they got Mike Madigan. Now government's clean. And what I would say is we have a maybe not as powerful, maybe not as successful, but there's a lot of Mike Madigan-like figures in Illinois. And until we clean out that culture of corruption with true ethics reform and we really give government back to the people, we're going to continue to have the bloated budgets, the corruption, the bad headlines. And unfortunately, people in Illinois are accustomed to, and it's sad because it's a great state with huge economic potential, a lot of great people, but we have this Chicago culture of corruption that's infected Springfield. Yeah. And, you know, J.B. Pritzker's high on that list. And you know, he's able to use Mike Madigan as an excuse, and we can't allow that.
Well stated, Senator Plummer. I like what you said there, and I think we could both agree that if it was a Republican that had been in office, obviously in Illinois that would never happen, but for decades and was on trial for corruption, I think that would have gotten a little bit more attention, don't you?
It would have, yeah. It would have, but I will say this too. I heard you say, you know, Republicans maybe can't win, but I'll tell you, I mean, we're competitive almost every gubernatorial election, and if we had a fair map process in Illinois,
yeah,
Republicans could easily have a majority in Springfield. So our gerrymandered map is part of the corruption.
I got to let you go, Jason, because I'm out of time, but I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Oh, Fish Fry Fridays kick off this Friday. We're so excited. We're going to take the show on the road for the next six Fridays. So we start at Holy Trinity Serbian Orthodox Church this Friday. We go to Knights of Columbus in Cottleville on the 14th. Assumption Parish, on the 21st. Queen of All Saints, we've been there before, on the 28th. On April 4th, can you believe, like, think about it. A month from now is going to be April 4th. The Cardinals are going to be starting baseball.
It's crazy.
It's going to be April already. St. Mary Magdalene in Brentwood. That's a new one. We haven't done that location before. And then Ott's Tavern to close it all out in Millstadt. Not Millstadt. Mark
nice
is learning
job.
How to pronounce the names of the Illinois towns. And don't forget, Brian Kilmeade's coming back here to the factory on the 22nd as well. Cusimano's with us for his regular Monday-Friday conversation. Frank, how are you?
Good to be with you, Mark. Doing well. Thank you, sir.
You want to start with the Blues? They were pretty much on fire. They stumbled last night. I know Fred said he was at the game Saturday, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I tell you what, it's tough to be upset with the Blues after that loss last night because, you know, A, they had won four in a row, and B, they were playing on 20 hours rest, and C, the Stars are really good. The one really dent in their armor, though, is killing the penalties. Last night, it was 4-for-4 for Dallas during one stretch, and the Blues are on pace to have their worst penalty kill season in the history of the franchise. But that's the bad news. The good news is they really have played good hockey, and there are only 1 point out of that final playoff spot as we speak, although Calgary and Vancouver have games in hand. So it's really been a positive stretch for the Blues after the break.
So let's talk a little college basketball. I'm looking at the rankings. It looks like Mizzou wasn't quite that affected by the loss at Vanderbilt. It was a tough one for me because, you know, they're coming off just a complete demolition of South Carolina, but they should have won that game. That's in the category of games that Mizzou should have won. Maybe it doesn't hurt you in the long run, but it was frustrating in the end.
Yeah, and to make it real easy for our listeners to understand, if you're up three and there's like, you know, 7-8 seconds to go,
I would have fouled.
You can foul.
I would have fouled.
And that you can't lose the game. And, you know, after the game, it was interesting. Coach Gates, who's really done a terrific job this season, he said he didn't second guess himself for that, but for calling a timeout and not setting up a defense. Ultimately, the player gave an open look three to a really good shooter for Vanderbilt. But you got to remember, Vanderbilt's a good team, and winning on the road in the SEC is extremely difficult. But I agree with you. That's a game you should have won.
Look, different, you know, coaches have different philosophies on that. But when I saw how much time was left, I'm like, foul them.
Yeah.
I knew that they could tie with the 3-point shot, and that, you know, different coaches are going to do different things. I wish it would have ended, you know, what do they have? Oklahoma and then Kentucky. That's it. Oklahoma on the road and Kentucky at home, and that's it before the tournament, right?
Yeah, and that Oklahoma game is going to be a little scarier than people think. Even though they beat the Sooners by 24, Oklahoma in their last two games, they lost by 3 at Oxford. They lost by 1 to Kentucky. And believe me, Porter Mosier is playing for maybe his coaching career at Oklahoma and playing for Oklahoma to get a chance to get in the NCAA tournament. Because despite their bad SEC record, they got a lot of, you know, really glistening big-time victories earlier in the season. And if they could beat Mizzou, that would really help their chances. So they'll be playing for their life on Wednesday.
You were talking about them on Friday, and I agree with you on that. Now, I went to that game at Mizzou Arena a couple of weeks ago, and they just freaking controlled Oklahoma. Having said that, I've watched a couple of these games that you just spoke of, and you know they are playing pretty well at home, and these home games in the SEC are very difficult. You close out on Saturday, my daughter's birthday, with Kentucky visiting Mizzou Arena for Senior Day, and that's going to be a lot of fun. Hey, SLU had a big victory over the weekend, didn't they?
Yeah, they really did. They lost to Loyola Chicago by 9 points 15 days ago, and they blew them out of the building. They beat them by 30. Gibson Jimerson set a school record with 9 threes. I got to tell you this one quick little story. Is Robbie Avila, who's unlike any other player in America because he's a little bit, I wouldn't say he's cut up, and he's got the tattoos all over himself, and he shoots threes, and he passes. He's 6'10". So he knocks down 3 consecutive threes. And the Loyola coach, Drew Valentine, I was watching him real closely, just looks at the SLU coach, Josh Schertz, and he just kind of smiles and puts his arms up in the air, and then Schertz started to smile like, you can't deal with somebody 6'10", knocking down 24-footers. So I'll say it for like the 100th time. Despite SLU's just above-average record, they can still win the conference tournament because they have the best big three in the Atlantic 10.
And is that an automatic bid if they win the conference tournament, or do you have to win the conference outright?
Oh, the conference tournament. You got to win that. I don't know. It should be. I don't know if it's going to be a two-bid league or not, but I think SLU could win the conference tournament.
Any baseball news you want to share here as, I was just mentioning this. You know, we're a month away from opening day.
Well, one name to keep an eye on, and granted, it's only a week's worth of action, but Victor Scott is hitting up a storm, hitting like .545, and he's hitting with power. Now, everybody, you know, after last year, think, oh, well, he's a bust. He's 23 years old. I don't know if he's had even 200 at-bats in the major leagues. If this is not an aberration and he can hit with his speed and his defense, oh, my goodness, that really changes the equation. We'll see if he can stay hot.
How's the pitching looking right now? Is there a way to gauge that?
Well, the starters have all been good. I mean, well, I'll tell you what, Steven Matz, when he's actually been healthy, and believe me, that's been really rare, has been a pretty good pitcher for the Cardinals. So he had 3 pretty good innings yesterday. Fenny has been pretty solid. McGreevy has been good, too. We have not seen all the starting pitchers in action, but so far, so good.
Frank, we want to get you to one of our fish fries. I think Fred's going to try to work with you on that. We start on this Friday. We'd love to have you swing by to one of those. So if your security detail can arrange that, the Secret Service and anything, we'd love to have you.
I'm going to make one of those 6, I promise. I appreciate the offer, too.
Hey, I played respectable pickleball with the King over the weekend as well. I think he would tell you that.
He did, Saturday. He gave me a full scouting report. I took him to the Billiken game, yes. He said you have really upped your game.
Well, I've only played like 15 times in my life, so I'm trying. We'll talk on Friday.
All right, sir. Take care.
I had tough competition. And here's the deal, Sue. I'm going to have to confront something that's realistic. I was thinking about how many times, because I'm going to make excuses first. I've only played pickleball, I was thinking about, no more than 20 times. Mm-hmm. I'd say 15. All right.
They say the key is repetition in this game.
But I'm playing with some dudes the other day that got 10 years on me.
Oof.
And they were pretty good. Like, really good.
Good.
So I had to step up my game. And yeah. I think I did respectable. But you do, there's strategy that I'm certainly not as adept
to.
At. Yeah, right.
That's
I'm
fair.
Trying. I'm hanging in there. We're coming back with Bachyangar Sargon and Paul Morrow in the next hour.
Get more at 971talk.com.